What news from Rome, my henchman?
Lord Herod, I have heard that a child shall be born who will become king of the Jews.
That's my job.
What is your command, master?
Kill all the babies.
From the director of Passion of the Christ and The Man Without a Face.
Joseph, I am an angel of the Lord sent by the Vatican to save your wife's baby.
But Mary's not pregnant.
She is now. It's not safe in wherever you live.
What should we do?
Get your ass to Bethlehem.
Comes the most beloved story of all time.
Herod, this man was caught sneaking out of Jerusalem.
Please, kind sir, I must join my three wise brethren on their quest.
You're on your way to a baby shower. Where is it?
I'll never talk.
Oh, yes, you will.
Torture him.
In a little town called Bethlehem.
Are there any more rooms at this inn?
Oh, gee, I don't know. We're pretty full. I mean, it's Christmas and all.
But, sir, I need a place to have this baby.
Well, one of the donkeys died this morning, so I guess there's room in the manger?
What? No crib for a bed?
All hell is about to break loose.
The wise man talked. Before he died, he said a star would lead us to the child.
But which one? There are hundreds.
Torture me, an astrologer. Follow that star!
He's beautiful. What should we call him?
Name him Jesus.
Now it's a race against time to make sure that the first Noel...
The mangers are strong, my lord. Their foundations go deep.
Burn them all down.
Isn't the last.
Get down!
The baby stopped the bullets.
He's beginning to believe...
We've checked every manger in town. Where is he?
Sorry, sir. I'm doing my best.
Your incompetence displeases me. Torture yourself.
Very well. Freedom!
This Christmas, take your entire family to the motion picture event of a lifetime.
Kill him, master. He's within your reach.
I can't do it. I am not a monster!
But I am dead!
No!
You just pushed your own henchman off a cliff. Why?
I've had a change of heart. Your son has taught me that there's more to life than just torture and killing.
He's not my son.
Mel Gibson's The Nativity Story.
My son just died on the cross.
He'll be back.
That's right.
Coming soon to theaters in 27 different DVD editions.
Jones, I'm going to send you to this planet where you're going to learn the natives, and then you'll get your legs back.
My real legs?
Yeah, your real legs back.
Wow, sign me up.
I've got a scar on my face to show how badass I am.
Wow, I'm convinced. Let's go.
Welcome back to the BenHeck.com podcast, episode 67, end of the year edition.
Pandora edition.
Pandora's box. I'm your host, Ben Heckendorn.
And I am Jason Jones.
In this podcast episode, that is, if you're still listening after the intro, we're going...
What about juju beads?
Well, your eyes will get turned into them if you go on Pandora.
Oh. Well, I don't know if that's worth getting my legs back.
But they're your real legs, even though you've already got them attached to your body. Oh, but you'll get them back.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, maybe.
I did like how his legs looked like atrophied and emaciated.
Yeah,
that was good.
That was nice work, yes.
Well, obviously we're going to talk about Avatar in this episode, but but also we're going to pick our game of the year, game of the decade, and movie of the year and movie of the decade, each of us. We have put very little thought into this, so we're just going to kind of come up with them as we go along.
So something will probably get forgotten, but that's okay.
Okay. Well, let's see. Is there any gaming news?
Gaming news. Well, there's been rumblings of, like, Sony having some sort of subscription services for the PlayStation Network, but nothing concrete so far. One of the interesting things I read about that, though, is that they're kind of pondering maybe having a subscription service where it would be basically if you pay the subscription rate, you can download any of the PS1 games off the store that you want to play. I don't know what else was entailed in that, but I thought that was kind of cool, because there's, you know, like...
It's like the Zune Pass, kind of?
Basically, yeah, and it'd be kind of neat, like, if Microsoft would even do something like that with the arcade, because, I mean, hell, I'd probably pay $15-$20 a month if I could download, like, anything off the arcade I wanted and play it.
I don't think Microsoft would do it unless Sony did it first, because obviously yeah. Microsoft is...
Well, yeah, they're making a lot of money the way it is, so...
Right.
But I would definitely be interested in such a service, because, I mean, there's a lot of games, you know, where it's like, yeah, I don't know if I want to buy it, but if I were subscribing, it'd be like, eh, shit. Download it.
And that's true.
It would enhance the community a lot. There'd be a lot more, you know, people playing like the multiplayer on, you know, Worms or, you know, a bunch of these games.
It would give a lot of the games, you know, more exposure too, because I'm sure there's some games people just don't care about.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff everyone downloads like Castle Crashers, but
yeah.
So people think that's what it's going to be, or is there some sort of credence to that?
There's like some sort of survey going around where I think it was either three or four different subscription models. So it sounded like they might offer one of these or maybe all of them. And a couple of them were like $30 a year, and then one of them was like $70 or $80 a year. And I can't remember what all the differentiations were between them, but the one key thing from what Sony has said is that the online gaming will still be free, so it'll still have a leg up on Microsoft in that respect. I think one of the other things was like exclusive access to like betas for games, or like you know, kind of exclusivity windows on demos, kind of like what they do with the gold subscription on Live right now. And
right,
so it'll be interesting to see what comes of it. It doesn't really shock me, because I mean, Sony financially isn't doing the greatest these days, so if there's an untapped revenue stream, I could
but
see
Sony's
them trying
awesome.
To... Oh yeah, they're awesome, but, you know, I wouldn't hold it against them, I guess I'll say, to, you know, try to make a little money off it. Because the thing is, you know, yeah, it's free, but compared to Xbox Live, it's second rate still, like PSN is, and like we've talked about, you know, the thing with Microsoft is they do charge for their service, so they have to make it good. They have to, you know,
right.
give people a reason to pay for it, basically.
And if you look at the Microsoft dashboard or the new Xbox experience, there's all sorts of shit everywhere to look at, and
yeah.
But the thing is, some people think it's kind of annoying, but I mean, you know where it you want. There's like one whole thing for your game shit. Everything else is just like fluff and like upsells.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to look at.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Of course, there's always Jessica Cockbot.
Yes, Cockbot.
Yes, we've decided that Jessica Chobot's name is really Jessica Cockbot, or at least Jones decided that.
I think it was while we were playing Spec Ops one night.
Hey, speaking of that, what do we have, like 8 stars to go?
7, I think. I think we're at 62 out of 69.
We should hit that shit up and finish it.
And we knocked out the two supposedly toughest ones. But I don't know, there's a couple that seem like they're going to be pretty goddamn hard.
Well, I don't know if they're going to be as goddamn hard as, what was it, High Explosives or
yeah,
whatever? With
that one that we played about 2.5 hours that one night. To
kill 10 juggernauts with explosives. Have fun.
And by the way, we're going to make you super weak if you play it co-op.
Oh, yeah.
Because Ben beat it himself, actually.
Right. But then if you play co-op, each player has significantly less health.
Because yeah,
if you
was
play
like
it by yourself.
2 to 3 shots and you'd be dead.
Yeah, it was probably at least a 50% health reduction. Kind of like Medicare is about to hit. Oh, shit. Did I just say that? Sorry. Anyway, yeah, so that was fun. But yeah, Jessica Chobot. I mean, Cockbot.
Yes.
That's not very nice. People don't go on making fun of your last name.
I'm not making fun of it. It's a compliment.
See, what would be a cockbot? A cockbot is like, would be some sort of motorized penis on
no.
the floor.
That's a dildo.
Oh!
A cockbot is something that, you know, operates upon a cock.
Okay, I think we need to change topics now.
Like a rooster, you know?
Okay, that's ridiculous. Now, let's see. Oh, so apparently the PSP Go is kind of a failure. I'm shocked.
Yeah, because they're talking about, what, the PSP 4000 now?
Yeah, that's been shot down.
Oh, did you see some shit? There was this article I caught the other day where Microsoft patented something with the avatars.
Oh, the health-based avatars?
Yeah, and it's, like, supposedly, and they're saying it's probably going to be a tie-in with Natal, kind of, but that it sounds like it'll be able to fairly accurately reproduce, like, what you look like as your avatar. I suppose it's going to be just like when they take that snapshot of that skateboard and the fingers don't come through. That just bothers me.
Well, some guy going to go up to the Natal in a wheelchair and be like, I'm going to get my leg back.
Maybe. I don't know.
This is your avatar.
Yes.
I'm surprised James Cameron isn't trying to sue Microsoft.
Probably will.
Did you realize there was not a single elevator in Avatar?
Well, it definitely wasn't a film version of Mass Effect then, I guess.
One thing James Cameron movies always had was elevators. Every single one of them. He loves elevators.
Well, this one also had a montage, which
I know
he hasn't done before.
That is so
weird.
I guess we're getting
ahead of ourselves. We'll save that, though. But
as you can tell, we're quite opinionated about Avatar. All right, well, let's move on .org. Since I'm sure we're going to bitch about Avatar, or I mean talk about Avatar for quite a while, let's get this party rolling.
Very well.
All right, let's pick our game of the year and game of the decade, since it is both the end of the year and the end of the decade. Technically, I know the decade does not end until the end of 2010, but fuck it.
Yeah, who cares? This is the end of the aughts, so.
No! Back in the old podcast '09, I took my gold to San Francisco. Then I've got me a hooker.
Nice.
Anyway, okay, let's do Game of the Year 2009. Go.
Very well. Uncharted 2 for the PlayStation. Because it's essentially like playing a movie, like playing a really good movie. It has, I don't know, I mean, the gameplay is largely unchanged from the first game, but that's fine because it was pretty solid. They did eliminate the bullshit six-axis crap from that game with, like, going across the log and throwing grenades, which I think after the first couple of times I tried to throw a grenade in the first game, I just gave up and never used them.
It was terrible.
So they fixed those things. It's just, it's very cinematic. You actually care about the characters, unlike our later subject in the podcast. Like you even
subtlety reigns supreme here on the Benheck.com podcast.
Well, like you even said when you played it, you know, they're like the part near the end of the game, you know,
yeah.
Which I won't give it away, but you said you almost cried. Which I mean, it didn't take me that far, but I was definitely emotionally involved and I was like, no, this can't happen. You know, like I was actually like going to be upset if things turned out a certain way, you know.
It's a Wonderful Life always makes me cry.
Nice.
When he opens up the book at the end, every time.
Hey, Wally messes me up when there's the scene where him and Eva are out in space after he gets shot out in the pod.
Oh, yeah.
But then he's alive, and then they're, like, flying around with a fire extinguisher.
Wally,
that
you
part
mean
always gets me welling up for some reason.
You mean the movie that is a far superior commentary on ecological disaster than another movie we're going to discuss later in this podcast?
Yep, that's the one I'm talking about. But,
Wally!
But yeah, I don't know, it's, and like the set pieces in Uncharted 2 are just amazing, like the train sequence. I mean, it's like you have to play it to just realize like how great it is, and like, you know, you sit there and play it, then you actually like think about it and dissect it afterwards, and you're like, you actually like think about how the hell did they even do this, like the way the background, because you're on this moving train and you can just like stand in a place on the train for like 5 minutes if you want to. And the scenery doesn't, like, repeat itself, really. I mean,
but it is linked to the action.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you have to, like, you know, jump out of the way of posts.
Yeah.
And then when you go out in the open, a helicopter attaches you.
Yeah.
Attacks you.
Attacks you, yeah.
So, yeah, it is. You are thinking, like, how did they program this to kind of work with that fluidity?
And it's very, yeah, this is very technologically impressive. And there's just like the train sequence is just one thing. I mean, there's another sequence where you're driving up this snow-covered mountain, and it's basically the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You're jumping
from truck to truck. Some of them are blowing up. You're getting shot at. It's just like crazy, and it's awesome. And
yeah, the thing about that game is, as you're going through it, like the first couple levels are really nothing special, but
yeah.
As you get into it, you're like, wow, this is pretty badass.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember when you played it, you know, you'd played it a little bit, and you emailed me, and you're like, well, it's really good, but it's kind of overrated. But then once you beat the game, then you're like, yeah, I don't know, yeah, it's pretty damn good. And I even emailed you while I was playing it, and it was basically the exact same thing. Where I was a few levels in, and I'm like, yeah, it's good, but it's kind of overrated. And then I got to the end, and I was like, my God, this was awesome.
Remember that part where that tank is chasing you through the village?
Yeah, that part's nuts.
Or that helicopter.
And that part
of
the helicopter shooting the building down, and there's guys like attacking you while this building's like crumbling from the barrage of bullets coming from this helicopter, and it's just very. It's very technically impressive, but it's also got great story, great characters, and, you know, like when the last year's model chick from the first Uncharted, when she first shows up, I was like, yeah, you know, when she showed up, because she was a great character from the first game, and so I was happy to see her show up, and, you know, you don't get that a lot in a video game where you're, like, excited to see a character show up again, and...
Yes, you did a really good job of the facial expressions in that game.
Yeah.
Well, the cutscenes, I mean, are just...
They're just seamless, like, right into the gameplay, pretty much, which is something the first game did. Like, there's no load screens.
That is probably easily the best-looking game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
See, it's good-looking, and it has a good story.
Yes.
What an idea!
Unlike something else we're going to talk about.
Well, okay, for the point-counterpoint, I guess... Maybe just quickly I'll say why that's not my pick, though.
Yes.
And then you can do the same when I pick my pick.
Yes.
So that'll be fair and democratic.
Very well.
Okay. Yes, it's a fantastic game. However, I thought the combat was a little sloppy. I mean, it's better than the first game, but it seems like you had to shoot every guy like 20 times to kill him, which kind of pissed me off. I can't remember what difficulty setting
it. Yeah, I was going to say, did you play it on, like, the hardest difficulty?
No, I'm pretty sure I played it on normal.
I didn't really have that problem.
Because games like that, I usually play on normal. Like, Call of Duty, I usually do, like, on the second highest. Or
Hardened, yeah.
Hardened, yeah. And the other qualm I had with it is, you basically fight a guy in a gray suit, a guy in a black suit, and then a guy with a shield. Those three enemies over and over and over and over. And I'm like, oh, come on. That kind of bothered me.
See, that tells you how good the game is when those are, like, the quibbles with it. But, yeah, I don't know, that shit didn't bother me at all, because I was like, eh, if it's some guy with all of his thugs and stuff, you know, it's like, yeah, they're probably going to be wearing similar outfits and stuff, because they're all, like, a bunch of mercenaries and whatever, so...
And then at the end, the bad guy says, Drake! Of course.
So, yeah, it's an exceptional game, so anybody with a PlayStation, you... would be a fool not to play it or
Definitely.
Its predecessor.
What about the online? I played it like once, so I really don't have much to say about it.
I don't either. I played the beta, and it was fine, but I don't know if it's anything, you know, terribly special. The co-op sounded interesting, but I didn't get to try it. Because it kind of encourages teamwork and things, I guess. Like, there's certain sections where you know, have to do things cooperatively, actually, to, like, get past them.
Like Spec Ops?
Kind of. I think you can play up to 3 players in the co-op, if I recall correctly. But I never tried it out, so I can't speak to that. But as people who've listened to the podcast should know by now, I'm more of the campaign-type gamer than the multiplayer online-type gamer. So the campaign's what counts for me most of the time. So yeah, so Uncharted 2, hands down, and... And the other great game I played this year that didn't necessarily come out this year was Fallout 3, of course. Although the Game of the Year edition came out this year, so technically...
I think we should save that for the next section, because you may be surprised to know that I'm going to bring that up again.
I can't believe it. But, yeah, so that was another exceptional game, but Uncharted 2 takes home the prize for me.
All right. you might be surprised by this one, but I'm going to give my prize to Batman Arkham Asylum.
Very well. It is a hell of a game. Definitely, yeah. Probably, I would have to say, the best new property of the year.
Right, and though it's based off Batman, I would say it's still a new property.
Yeah.
They're making a sequel, you know.
Yep. Sounds like it's actually going to be, like, in Gotham City and stuff, which could be cool.
Hell, I'll play it. Anyway. So, if you haven't... Well... I found myself recommending it to people more than any other game. It seems like whenever games came up, I always said, oh, have you played Batman Arkham Asylum?
Yeah.
And then even when I know that's played, he's like, oh, yeah, it's good. Yeah. Like, Dave's got it right now when
I was
over there. And yeah. And he was like, yeah, dirty.
Pimp.
Well, Batman Arkham Asylum was it's basically Dead Space meets Metal Gear Solid meets a beat-em-up game.
Yeah, it has a little Assassin's Creed in its blood, as far as its combat, I think. Which is fine.
Yeah, the combat's actually kind of simple. Basically, you just kind of attack and counterattack and whatnot.
To me, that was what made it great.
Yeah, because you
the
felt
simplicity.
Like, you felt like Batman, too.
Yeah. And that's easily what makes it the best, is, yeah, you feel like Batman playing it.
Because in the movies, it's not really necessarily about what Batman does, it's about how he reacts to what people do to him.
Yeah.
And,
dead.
Well, let's see. I really liked how it created, like, a whole backstory world for Arkham Asylum. Like, you could, you know, go around solving the riddles, which, of course, I did them all. And then you could go around, trying to collect the tapes.
Yeah, the Ghost of Arkham stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so, basically, there's all this, like, backstory that's really superfluous, but it's still there.
Yeah.
And it really fleshes things out nicely. So it's kind of like BioShock in that sense. In fact, the backstory is probably... It's almost like more fleshed out than BioShock because there's more of shit to find.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's the spirit of Arkham, which is like all these like stone tablet artifacts telling the history of Arkham Asylum. You can find those. You can figure out the Riddler puzzles. You can find all the interview tapes. And like there's like a tape, for instance, where Harley Quinn is just a nurse and then like...
Yeah,
the Joker, like,
the
lures
Joker.
Her in.
Yeah.
That was cool. The combat's good. The graphics are incredible. The environment is just astoundingly well done.
Yeah.
And it has gadgets. That's one of the things I don't like about the new Batman movies is there's not enough grappling hooks and shit like that. But this is basically... This is like the late 90s... I'm sorry, the late 80s, early 90s kind of Batman. And... It's just, you know, he's got grappling hooks and, like, the kind of shit that Michael Keaton had in the movies, that's what's in this game.
Yeah.
And it's got the voice cast, mostly, from the old TV shows, like Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, the animated series,
Is the Joker and whatnot. And, it's just really good. And the demo didn't really do it justice, I thought. I'd heard this was going to be a great game. It's like, okay, so I downloaded the demo. I'm like, ugh. Like, the stealth stuff I had trouble with. And it is kind of hard.
Yeah.
But once you get into the game, it's great. And the stealth part, sometimes I did, like near the end, you know, like there's that cave filled with bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty difficult. I had trouble with that.
Yeah.
Because...
I know there was some room you go into at one point where there's like six or seven guys and they only have guns.
Mm-hmm.
That part was kind of tricky, too.
Because another thing that's cool about it is when you're fighting guys with guns, you can get shot a couple times, kind of like in the movies, but that's about it. So you actually do have to be sneaky and like pick them off one at a time. So again, it's very Batman-y.
Yeah.
And it's great. Of course, if they're unarmed, you can just go in there and waste them all. Well,
yeah, I love the stuff like where you could grapple up on the gargoyle things, and then when a guy would walk underneath, you could like swoop down and grab him and tie him up and have him dangling from the gargoyle.
Mm-hmm.
And then shoot over to another gargoyle, and that guy would be, like, screaming for help, and his buddies would come over and be, like, looking up at him, and then you could swoop the batarang at the rope you left hanging there, and his body would fall down on the other guys and knock him out.
Or you could put explosive gel there and get him.
Yeah. So that's what was neat about it, too, is, yeah, you had, like, different ways to skin a cat, basically.
And the atmosphere is really good. Like, I don't know what part was, but there's a part where I think you're in the hospital or something. There's like a voice over recording. And it's like, welcome to Arkham Asylum. It's like, we provide care for all disturbed patients, not just super criminals. And it's just good.
one of my favorite things with that game was the, and this would be on my short list of best games of the year as well, so, but I loved the beginning of the game where you're going into the asylum with the Joker, and it's, like, leading you through the asylum, so it's basically kind of giving you a little tour of the place as it's setting up the story.
Ah.
Because you're going along, and the Joker's next to you, and the guards are there.
Oh,
and you're,
yeah,
like, walking in, and then, like, you see these little TVs with, like, blurbs about Arkham Asylum going off. You know, like, one of the doctors is talking or something, and but then you walk in, you go down, like, an elevator, you go through another area, and it's kind of like setting up the world you're going to be running around in.
Don't
for
you
the
see
next
like
the,
you see the Killer Croc at one time? You know, he passes
yeah, you
by.
Yeah, pass he by him. Yep.
So it kind of sets everything else up.
So I thought that was neat. You know, it's kind of like the movie Panic Room, where it has the shot where it like goes up and through the house and all this, or the apartment, whatever townhouse. You know, and it shows you, you know, the environment that the action's going to be taking place in, so that when the characters are running around, you know where they are in relation to things, and that was kind of how that worked with this game, where it, you know, set that up well, so.
Well, that was just one building, but yeah, I mean,
yeah.
You definitely get an idea, because there's like, what,
yeah,
eight buildings?
Yeah, something like that.
There's like a mansion, and a hospital, and a penitentiary, and
there's
of course,
like the
botanical gardens.
Yeah.
I wonder who's in there.
But, yeah, like, my only quibbles, I suppose, with that game were, like, the detective mode was a neat idea, but it becomes almost a crutch through the game. Like, I mean, there's a lot of times where I found myself just playing in detective mode a lot of the time, which is where you hit a button and then it's like Batman kind of gets, like, X-ray vision, and so he can see, like, where all the bad guys are and stuff like that.
Or the weak walls or
yeah.
areas he can, like, grapple to.
Yeah, or breakthrough stuff. And I mean, it's a cool mode, but it's like you can really overuse it, which, I mean, that's
so you
could
play the whole game in detective mode if you wanted.
Yeah, which I guess is fine, but it becomes a little too much of a crutch, so it's almost like you rely on it a bit more than maybe you should. But and then, like, the end fight with the Joker, I thought that was kind of weak, too.
It was definitely the most video gamey part of the game.
Yeah. Because it's just, I guess I don't want to give anything away, but yeah, it's, I guess it's probably what you would expect the fight to be, because the Joker isn't really a match for Batman in his normal form. So they had to do something about that to make him a bit of an adversary.
What about the last guy in Uncharted? It was kind of the same thing. He drinks magical juice and becomes this unstoppable killing machine.
But that was what he was after for the whole game. So it makes a little more sense.
I thought the Joker was after that Titan juice for the whole game, too.
Yeah, I suppose.
I'm saying it's silly,
similar,
but so was the end of Uncharted 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least the true treasure wasn't knowledge or
yeah.
whatever.
I guess in Uncharted 2, with the whole setting of the game and stuff, it kind of fit more with it, I guess. I don't know. For me. But, yes, they're both great games, and I would say if you have a PS3, you're in luck, because you can play both of them on the PS3.
Yep. Well, I don't even know if Batman is necessarily my favorite game of the year, but I think it did the most things right in a new way of any game, and it wasn't a
yeah.
sequel either, so that's why I picked it.
Yeah. Well, and the neat thing with it is that, yeah, it, you know, generally movie tie-in games, I mean, I know it's not a direct game based off a movie, but I mean, Batman is looked at as kind of a movie or comic book property or whatever, and those games, by and large, don't turn out very good normally, so to have a game come along that you can speak of in the same breath with, like, BioShock and Dead Space definitely says something about the achievement that they came up with in making that game.
That's quite an achievement.
So,
those are two games everyone should check out.
Yes.
Runners up before we move on.org?
God. Well, Forza Motorsport 3 I would have to mention, just because it's, like, the best driving game I've ever played, and Anybody who gives a shit about that type of game and has an Xbox, get it. You won't be disappointed.
What about Call of Duty?
Call of Duty, it wouldn't be like on my short list or anything, but it was definitely a great step up from the previous Modern Warfare.
I know, I sure played it a lot on Spec Ops.
Yeah, but it's still, I don't know. I mean, it's a good game, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't deserve to be talked about with the likes of Uncharted 2 and Arkham Asylum.
What about Infamous?
Infamous would be on the short list, I would say. That was a really cool game, and it had a really awesome, like, twist ending that just...
M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong, we've been proud of that twist ending.
Yeah.
Because you don't see it coming, either.
Yeah, it's so cool.
But it still makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, just the reveal of it, it's like, wow, they did that. That's cool. You know?
So, if you have a PlayStation 3, you're in luck again, because you can play Infamous.
Yeah, this year was definitely... I think the year where the PS3 started to step up and...
See, that's what I tell a lot of people. It's like, you know, 90% of the games are on both consoles anyway.
Yeah.
And the exclusives, I don't know about you, but I actually like the ones on PlayStation 3 better than the Xbox ones.
It's probably fairly even. Probably a little bit tilted toward the PlayStation because of things like Uncharted and Infamous. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, I would agree. It's... I mean, I like the Xbox a lot, but, you know, like we've kind of been saying for a while now, once Sony starts getting the good exclusives coming in and things like that, it's, you know, it can be Sony's time to shine, and that's starting to happen, I think.
Yeah, like Forza 3, you know, the quality of it really, notwithstanding, like Gran Turismo 5 will outsell it by a significant margin.
Yeah, sure.
It doesn't even matter. I mean, sure, I'm sure it'll be a perfectly fine game, but
yeah.
People just... flock to it,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah, it'll sell a shitload. And I actually read the other day, I heard no fanfare about this, I didn't actually see it announced anywhere, but there was like this list of like the games in the first quarter next year, and they had a release date for Gran Turismo 5.
Isn't it June?
No, it was like February 8th.
What?
That was
maybe in Japan?
Yeah, that could be.
I'd heard June.
That might be it, because yeah, I think it's supposed to come out in Japan first, but... they didn't distinguish that. I think it was on IGN. But that would make sense, because when I read that, I'm like, how the hell did I not hear about this?
Yeah.
Well, good, that'll save me a little money, because I have like Mass Effect 2 coming out at the end of January, which there's an excellent Xbox exclusive.
And BioShock 2
comes out. Is that the end of February or beginning of March?
I think it's February.
But,
it's the new Christmas.
Yes. So anyway...
Okay, yeah, let's go with our game of the decade now. Like, the last 10 years...
Ugh, God.
Now, it could either be the game you think was most important, or, like, your favorite.
I'd probably say BioShock. It's probably my favorite, just because...
Wow, you love that frickin' game.
I know. Well, it's so awesome. I remember I didn't really hear shit about it until... like a few weeks before it was coming out or something, and then it was kind of getting this buzz, and I was like, what the hell is this game? And then a demo came out on Live, and so I'm like, well, what the hell, I'll download this thing. And I just remember, like, from the very beginning, it's like, my God, this is like, I've never played anything like this before, where you know, the plane crashes and you're in the ocean, and like, you couldn't even tell when you were supposed to start playing the game because it just looked like a cutscene. And, you know, so you're stranded out in the ocean with, like, flaming debris all around you, and there's, like, this little island with, like, this lighthouse-type thing on it, and you crawl up to it, and then you go inside, and then it's, like, this whole world down there. And I don't know, it was just... it was one of those great gaming experiences that you don't get to have very often, and... maybe it wasn't the technically best game of the decade or anything, but it's the one that I think had, like, the biggest impact on me as far as, like, creating that world and the story and, the you know, how they had the plasmids, and there's a lot of different ways you can choose to attack the game. Like, you can go around hacking the turrets and things like that, or hacking the little bot things that come around so they'll fight for you, and you can, like, you know... set stuff on fire and then throw it at characters, and you know, there's like, I don't know, it was just very cool. It was one of those games where you play it and it's like, this is what I would do if I was in this situation, and you can actually do that in the game. And, yeah, it was just very cool, and that game, too, also had a little bit of a video gamey ending, but,
yeah, pretty much the same kind of video game ending as Batman Arkham Asylum, actually.
Yeah. So, it, yeah, I don't know, it was very... very cool, and had, you know, Andrew Ryan.
I'm Andrew Ryan.
I think the great thing with that game is it does what, like, a great movie is supposed to do. It just sinks its hooks into you, like, immediately, because, you know, you're in the ocean, you come inside, it seems like it's this desolate, abandoned place, and then you get into the little pod, and you start floating along, and then all of a sudden, boom, it opens up, and you're listening to, like, this... you know, recorded message from Andrew Ryan, you know, talking about, like, all of the, you know, great stuff that's going to happen in Rapture, and, you know, you come out into this world, and you see, like, this whole underwater city, and you're like, my God, this place looks really awesome.
Definitely the best opening of the decade.
Yeah.
For a video game. So. I was going to say, I think that's the only game, well, Call of Duty 4 doesn't count, because it was so short, but I think I actually beat Bioshock in 2 days because I just wanted to beat it.
Yeah.
Normally I spend like at least a week at the absolute minimum on a game. But yeah, Bioshock, I just tore into it.
And I love how like the guy you think is... I mean, of course there's a betrayal in it because, I mean...
It's a video game.
It's a video game. But I like how the guy who you think is the villain really isn't the villain, which I thought was a nice touch. And even after you meet him, there's a lot of game left after it. And, yeah, I don't know. It had a lot of neat storytelling to it and just a really fucked up world to explore. Like Sander Cohen and all that stuff. And so, yeah, that's probably the one for me.
It was a pretty badass game. I really can't say anything negative about it because it was badass. Of course, I had the computer version, which is much far superior to the Xbox.
Says the guy who, when he came over and saw it on my HD TV, was like, oh, yeah, it looks about the same.
Well, that was before I got my new video card. Okay.
You said it. I didn't record it, but it was said.
All right, let's see. My pick for Game of the Decade is probably not going to surprise anyone who's listened to more than one of these podcasts. Although I think I do have a pick for Most Important Video Game of the Decade, which I will... I'll say that first.
Wii Sports?
No, actually, if you think about it, they've all come out this well, all the ones that count. Grand Theft Auto. I think that really changed everything. I mean, the Part 3, which, let's face it, that was the first Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
That was in 2001, so that's been all in this decade. And look at how many games that's influenced.
Well, yeah, it's like a whole genre exists because of that game. Like the sandbox genre, and even... mature gaming in general, I would say, owes something to that game because it kind of threw down the gauntlet and, you know, said mature stories can be told in video game form and, you know.
And granted, their video games just ripped the plots cleanly off existing movies like Scarface.
Yeah.
But
that's the best one because it was Scarface. And there hadn't been a Scarface video game at that point, so... And I'm sure Vice City wipes its ass with the Scarface video game that was actually made.
But. Yeah, releasing a Scarface video game isn't a little superfluous because Vice City was Scarface.
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't Cuban. That was about the only difference.
Yeah, I would agree. Grand Theft Auto was definitely a very important game. I'd say, like,
moment.
Halo was probably very important also. In its own way. I mean, the Xbox basically would not... We probably wouldn't have an Xbox 360 if it weren't for Halo. I mean, let's face it.
Well, Halo 2 is why we only have 100 friend limit on a friend list.
Yeah, because that's still so popular, and
yep.
The Xbox can't support any more than that. The original Xbox, so...
I think they could change the firmware or something. Apparently people are still playing Halo 2 on the original Xbox.
Yeah. Well, I know there are a lot of people that didn't really care, even though Halo 3's multiplayer gets played so much, but there were a lot of people who didn't care for it, and they actually went back to Halo 2 and played it. And so, I mean, it's not as significant as Grand Theft Auto, but in its own way it is, because I honestly don't think there would be an Xbox 360 without Halo being in existence, because, I mean, the Xbox didn't sell that great in the first place, and it probably would have sold, you know, worse, significantly less without that game.
Hmm.
I know it was the game that convinced me to buy one. Because I remember I was sitting there, and I'm like, you know, I want to buy one of these systems. And it was between that and the GameCube. And I went online and looked, you know, at, like, the games that were available. And it was only, like, a week after the Xbox had come out. And I was kind of intrigued by the GameCube because it had, like, that Rogue Squadron game that came out for it. And it looked really cool, and I'm a Star Wars geek.
I like the GameCube.
And, but then I read about Halo, and I'm like, wow, this game sounds really goddamn cool. And so I cruised down to the Richland Center Walmart, and they had one Xbox left, and so I picked it up. And, I mean, if it weren't for Halo, I wouldn't have bought the system that day.
And now you've never looked back.
Yep. So, that's just one person's story. But, yeah, so. But your real pick for Game of the Decade.
As my pick for Game of the Millennium. No, both Millenniums. Fallout 3. I don't even need to say anything about it because we've talked about it so much on this podcast.
Would it be your pick if it weren't for the DLC?
Yes. Okay. Still, it's just there's just so much you can do.
Yeah.
The DLC, I don't regret a cent of it. Okay, maybe for
Operation Anchorage.
And the Alien one was kind of lame too. But no, Fallout 3 is the game of the decade.
See, I actually liked both those missions because they kind of. I mean, I like the open world stuff, but I thought it was kind of nice to have something linear in the midst of it. It kind of, like, broke it up. It's like, okay, I just have to, like, drive forward in this section of the game.
Well, the alien thing kind of sucked, because the aliens were so hard to kill sometimes. It was kind
of... Yeah, some of those, like, the ones that were kind of, like, shimmery and stuff, yeah, those guys were a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, you just, like...
they were, like, the toughest characters in the game, probably.
Well, the game does the same thing Oblivion does. The enemies level up as you do.
Yeah, some of them do.
Yeah.
Because I know I'd run into raiders when I was all powered up, and I'd just one-shot vats, kill them, you know? blow their head right off. That was awesome.
Oh, the raiders. But, yeah, so Fallout 3 is awesome.
Yeah, so that would be definitely if I were making a top 5 or whatever, it would definitely be on that list. It was a hell of a game. And we've both gotten all of the achievements in it.
Yes! Which I've never... That's the only game I've even come remotely close on, because it's awesome.
Yeah. And if you look at Ben's profile on the Xbox, it looks he doesn't have them, but he does.
I got them when the glitch was in place, so...
That's weird that they were never able to, like, fix it so it would retroactively pick them up.
Yeah, if you got those achievements before May 28th, I believe it was... And I'm sure I did, because I bought Broken Steel as soon as it came out.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But that's okay.
Okay, what about video game console of the decade?
It's a tough one. It's between either the 360 or the PS3. I'd probably say the 360, just because I've gamed way more on it.
What about the PS2? I mean, that was a big deal.
I was never a big PS2 person. I was actually, once I got my Xbox, thanks to Halo, I played my Xbox way more than I played my PS2, actually.
You can't say it wasn't an important system.
Yeah, it was important.
It's the top-selling system of all time.
Well, I know. I mean, it's important, but it wouldn't be my pick for the one that I liked the most, I guess I would say. I preferred the original Xbox to the PS2.
Oh, I hated those controllers.
Oh, they were awesome.
No, they weren't.
Oh, yeah. Take it from somebody who used one a lot. It was great. What do they call those things? Isn't there some slang name for
them?
The
Duke.
The Duke, yeah.
I don't know exactly what that means.
That's unfortunate that it's named after John Wayne, but...
Who was in How the West Was Won.
Yeah, Cinerama.
Hey, the rest of that, other than the Civil War stuff, that movie was great.
Yeah. I love that part when Jimmy Stewart just, like, threw that axe into that guy. Because you're sitting there like, yeah, throw a knife into him. Yeah, he did it. Yeah, throw that axe. Yeah! And that's, like, how the movie begins. So it's, like, this old movie from, what, like, the 60s? And it's got, like, everybody
or something like that.
Like, everybody who was alive in Hollywood at that time shows up in the movie, pretty much.
And it was in real Cinerama, which is where they ran three cameras side by side simultaneously to create a panoramic picture.
Yeah.
So basically, it was like three different films are synchronized at once. Pretty hardcore.
And the Blu-ray actually has a mode on it where it kind of tries to like fake it or something, which is interesting.
Smile box.
Yes.
So, oh, yeah.
So it kind of looks like an hourglass on its side.
So, apparently, Cinerama changed movies.
Yeah, two of them.
Oh, are we going to do our pick for movie of the decade?
Oh, maybe, yeah, that stuff.
We can just do that real quick, then we can move on to the real topic.
Yes. Oh, God, movie of the decade. So many good ones.
Ed Wood didn't come out this decade, right?
Nope. God. I think I narrowed it down to three, and I'm not necessarily saying any of these three is the best movie of the decade, but they're like my favorites, and it'd be Unbreakable from, God, what was that, 2000?
Yes.
Right at the beginning. And then Minority Report.
Tom!
Yeah! And The Prestige. And stuff like AI would, you know, be honorable mentions, along with like Munich, There Will Be Blood, whatnot. So there's a lot of Spielberg on this list.
Wow, you really like The Prestige.
Yeah, The Prestige. I love that movie. I mean, it's probably really between that and Minority Report for my pick, and I might almost lean toward The Prestige because it's just so awesome. I remember when I saw The Prestige, immediately I wanted to watch it again. It was just, like, the whole ending is so cool, and...
Well, it does involve Nikola Tesla.
Yes, and... I don't know, it's just very well-structured and very interesting, and gets into, like, obsession and all those interesting
What about
elements.
The Illusionist?
That was actually a really good movie, too. It had the misfortune of coming out at the same time as The Prestige, though.
That happens a lot in Hollywood.
Yeah, but that was a good movie. I liked that one quite a bit. And then Minority Report, of course. Yeah,
Minority Report,
Tom running around being awesome.
I watched it a couple months ago. I hadn't watched it in quite a while, and yeah, it is damn good.
Yeah. I know Dale said that, too. He's like, each time he watches it, he appreciates it more. And it's just so well-paced. It's like, there really isn't, like, a dead spot in it. So...
Well, the end of it is a little long.
It's a little L.A. Confidential-ish at the end, but...
Or what was the other movie we were talking about? Psycho? Psycho kind of has a Scooby-Doo ending.
Yeah.
Some other movie does, too. I can't remember. Oh, shit. What was it?
Well, it was something recent that you compared to Psycho, I think.
Kind of the ending where they kind of sit around talking about what happened.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Minority Report isn't really like that.
No.
Well, but, you know how... Remember how some people said AI should have ended it with him being frozen under the water?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think some people think Minority Report should have ended with him...
When he went into the cryo...
Into the cryo thing.
Yeah, which I agree that would have been a nice ending as well.
But it would have been kind of depressing.
Yeah.
Can't stop Tom, though.
Yeah, I always love how people say, like, AI has, like, this feel-good ending, and I've never grasped that.
AI is... I would certainly agree AI is probably the most underrated, underappreciated, un-understood film of the decade.
Yeah, it's quite an excellent movie. So it's, it would definitely be on any sort of short list I'd make for the decade. But yeah, so I'd probably, it'd be between The Prestige and Minority Report, it'd be whichever one I saw last, probably, because I love Unbreakable, but the ending is a little weak, I would say. But,
oh yeah, that kind of had Scooby-Doo ending as well.
Yeah. And it just kind of like ties things up a little too rapidly, I think, but just, like, cinematically, that movie's, like, so cool. Like, that opening scene where they're in the department store, like, fitting room, and this baby's been born, and you don't really realize what's happening, and it just, as the scene unfolds, you just become more and more like, what? Oh my God, you know, it's
what
like,
happened with M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong? His first three movies really good, and then he just went off the, well, I know you liked some of his other movies, but I didn't.
I mean, The Village was fine.
I hated The Village.
But it had Sigourney and Slick Willy in it.
The Village? I remember because you brought that over one time and we all watched it. That was actually one of the few movies where I actually was upset that I wasted two hours of my life watching it.
We watched that together?
It seems like it was like when we lived in that old place.
Yeah.
Like when Dale and I had
maybe I did.
I'm pretty sure I remember watching it. There's probably like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And I was like actually upset that I watched it. I hated that movie.
See, I didn't mind that one.
Even
but I mean,
with Sigourney Weaver.
But it's nowhere near his first few movies. And then Lady in the Water, he was pretty much up his ass at that point.
What about
The Happening? The Happening just kind of happened.
Ing.
It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good either. It was just kind of like, didn't really have a lot of reason to exist.
Who thinks Mark Wahlberg is a good actor?
I don't know. I mean, I enjoy seeing him in things, but he's pretty much a blank slate.
Yeah.
He was really great in The Departed, though, and it was fun seeing him shoot Matt Damon at the end.
He's in The Lovely Bones.
Is he?
A movie no one cares about all of a sudden, it would seem.
Does that come out, like, this weekend? Like,
I think it got kind of pushed back because it's not supposed to be very good.
Oh, so it's not going to be an Oscar bait movie, then?
Unlike You Know What, Atar, apparently. Which I can't understand, which we'll get to.
Yes.
All right, I'll rattle off mine real quick, and then we'll get to the Avatar discussion. Spider-Man 2, obviously.
Wimbledon.
No. I do think Spider-Man 2 is not only one of the best movies of the decade, but easily the best comic book movie ever made. It's good!
It's good until, like, the end. The end, it goes off the rails for, like, the last 25, 30 minutes.
All these movies we talk about go off the rails at the end, it seems like.
But this one, it's, like, the last 25, 30 minutes. Like, a lot of these other movies, it's, like, a couple minutes. But, I don't know. Spider-Man 2, it's... I don't know. I like the stuff with him and Doc Ock at the beginning before he, you know, turns into evil Doc Ock.
And Doc Ock, then he says, I am not a monster!
Like, I like the part where they're having the dinner, like, where it's Toby and then, like, him and his wife or whatever.
Oh, yeah, the woman from nice Star scene. Trek Insurrection, yeah. I like that whole movie. You can have, like, Bruce Wayne buying hotels and whatnot and, like, fucking supermodels, but in Spider-Man 2, and he's, like, destitute, and his grandma or his aunt is destitute, and she tries to give him that $20 bill for his birthday, and he doesn't want to take it, and then she, like, almost cries because he doesn't.
Yeah.
So that's realistic, and I think Sam Raimi is actually really good at that kind of stuff, and he doesn't get enough credit for it in his movies. Like, if you look at a movie like Simple Plan or Dead Naked Katie Holmes, The Gift.
The Gift, yeah, that was a good movie.
You know, he kind of has a feel for kind of humanity and, like, relationships between characters. I think he's kind of not appreciated for that. So yeah. I think a lot of the stuff in Spider-Man 2 is really good. And, you know, the way the plot works is really super airtight. Like, the villain wants this shit. I don't know what it is. And what's-his-face wants to kill Spider-Man, so they make a deal. And everything's pretty airtight.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's one. I'm going to go with Team America World Police, which came out the same year as Spider-Man 2.
That one is a lot of fun.
It's a comedy, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's great because it's a satire on crappy action movies.
Yeah.
It's a satire on Republicans, and it's a satire on Democrats. It's...
Yeah, it doesn't pull any punches. It attacks everyone equally, basically, which is the best way to do it if you're going to make that kind of movie.
And it has great music. I mean...
Yeah.
Because in South Park the Movie, which I didn't particularly care for very much, even though I love South Park, they had the musical numbers, but they're kind of superfluous, and there's too many of them, kind of like The Nightmare Before Christmas, which, again, I must not be a geek because I don't care for that movie.
I've never even seen it, and I don't really care.
Because do people call me... am I considered to be a geek, I wonder, online? Or, I mean, you'd think I would think. But I don't like Blade Runner. I don't like Tron. I don't like Nightmare Before Christmas. Anyway. How did I get on that? Oh, yes. So the music in Team America just kind of uses background, you know, like Aerosmith music, like Michael Bay would use. But, of course, they made their own songs, and they were hilarious. I mean,
yeah,
so definitely that one. Okay, I guess I need one more.
And one of my favorite parts in that movie is the part where he's all, like, down, and he, like, is in that bar.
Yes!
And he's, like, getting all plastered and shit, and then he kind of, like, barfs or whatever, and they throw him out, and then he's out in the street, and It's like the scene, you know, where the guy kind of, like, rises up or whatever in the action movie. Like, the music's all swelling, but he's just, like, vomiting and vomiting and vomiting more and more. And the more he vomits, like, the more the music swells up. And that part just kills me every time. It's just so goddamn funny.
I love the part when he's staggering out of the bar. After, you know, the guy's like, get out of here, you drunk bum. And he's staggering out of the bar, and then
you
he,
gave
like,
up on life, didn't you?
Well, no, before he gets out of the bar, he kind of falls over. Yeah. Like, he stumbles, but then he, like, looks at somebody because he's like, ooh, I just stumbled towards you. That means I'm going to fight you.
Yeah.
And then he walks out. It's just so fucking funny. Because it's kind of realistic, but it's with puppets.
Yeah.
And that scene had a scrolling ham sign in the background. They didn't even bother to scale it. It's just a full-size ham sign in their miniature set. Oh, I love that movie. It's just so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And it's just... I don't think... Well, I know it got really good reviews, but, I mean... Was it Roger Ebert, like, didn't get it? He's like, this is stupid and infantile. It's like, that's the point. I mean, it's about stupid infantile movies. Like, the dialogue is, like, just wonderfully terrible. Yes, it's a parody, but, yeah, it's a great movie. I love it. I guess I need one more movie? Okay, let me think. Shit, what other movies did I really like this? God. Oh, well, that one, no. That one, shit, I don't know. Fuck. Let me just think back to the years of movies I liked.
Would it be AI?
No, I mean, I like AI a lot, but...
Indy 4?
No, I don't think Indy 4 is the one. So I got that one. God.
There's been a lot of great movies, though, like Million Dollar Baby and stuff. Like, that movie just... ripped your fucking soul out.
Actually, I think I'm going to go with it. It's not a movie I watch a whole lot, but I think it was probably the best cinematic experience I've ever had at a theater, Return of the King.
Okay.
Like, that whole movie was just thrilling. And, like, at the end, my heart was just pounding because I hadn't read the books.
Okay.
And I was like, shit, what's going to happen?
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And it was fucking awesome. So there you go.
It could have had a few less endings, though. But...
True. But, I mean, like, the battle at the end was epic, unlike Avatar. You cared about the characters, unlike Avatar. And now I think we should get on to Avatar.
Duh.
Okay, spoiler warning. We're going to spoil Avatar.
Yeah, so if you, for some strange reason, want to see it and haven't yet, then you might as well just shut it off right now. Or if you want us to save you, like, $15 or whatever it might cost you to go and see this movie where you live, then keep listening.
Okay, well, hey, the DVD rack over there. Pull Dancing with Wolves and Atlantis off that DVD rack.
But why?
Because.
Let's see, here's Atlantis.
Dancing with Wolves up in the middle.
So this is even the old school Orion pimp one with Costner looking like a man on the cover.
Well, it's still anamorphic, so that's good.
Nice.
Okay, how to save yourself $15 for IMAX, or if you're with your woman or whatever, $30. Yeah.
As long as you're subscribed to Netflix and, you know, you have the two movies at a time thing, you can just go and add Dances with Wolves
and
Atlantis.
Add Dances with Wolves and Disney's Atlantis, which is a really underrated movie, to your Netflix queue. Then do this. Watch Dances with Wolves chapters 1 through 20. Pull it out like a Catholic. Then grab Atlantis and... watch chapters 14 through 19. And
there it is.
You'll have Avatar.
And the movie's probably about the same length in that case, then. And it's way better.
I am a huge, huge Cameron fan.
Yes.
I even went to the fucking Ghost of the Abyss in the theater. The one where him and Bill Paxton rode in a submarine to look at the Titanic in 3D.
Yeah, didn't you go down to, like, Milwaukee or something to see that?
Oh, I was already there anyway.
Oh.
It's actually when we were doing Port Washington shit.
Oh, okay.
Anyway. And, you know, I've watched all those movies and blah, blah, blah. And I'm a guy, and I will still admit to liking Titanic 12 years later.
Yes.
I think I saw it, like, 3 times in the theater, at least.
I only saw it once, but it's a fantastic movie.
It's a great movie. So I was like, yes, Avatar. And then I told Jones, I'm like, hey, we got to go see that at midnight.
And I was like, well, why not? I only have to go to work in the morning, but who cares? So,
yeah, I didn't get a whole heck of a lot of sleep either.
But that's okay. I didn't care. It's a Friday, so.
So I'm like, okay, well, it's got to be 3D. It's got to be IMAX. The tickets were like $15 each.
Yeah, easily the most I've ever paid for a movie.
But I still did it because I'm like, yeah.
Yep.
And then
we watched it.
About 2 hours in, I was thinking, gosh, I wish I was rather watching Disney's Atlantis. Because it's pretty much the same movie at the end. Except for Atlantis is, what, 96 minutes, 90 minutes?
Probably,
like that.
Yeah. And it has characters you care about.
It's Avatar is just...
It's a tech demo.
It's a tech demo.
It's really what it is.
The character... Yeah, go on.
Character development is basically non-existent in this movie. It's, I mean, it's really a shame, and I was even talking about this with people at work the other day, and this one guy made the comment, he's like, well, you shouldn't expect that in a movie like this. And I was like, what the hell kind of argument is that? It's like, I expect character development in whatever I watch, and especially when it's a filmmaker like James Cameron. I mean, this is the guy who made Titanic. You know, he made you forget that the ship was going to hit an iceberg because the characters were so good that you just got wrapped up in the story. And when the iceberg showed up, you're like, oh, fuck. That's right. You know, and...
And I definitely... Titanic definitely needed to be as long as it was because it spends, like, the first 2 hours or whatever setting up the characters and whatnot. So when all the shit goes down, you actually care about everybody.
Yeah.
And I guess they tried the same thing with Avatar, but it just doesn't work. I mean, I don't... Sigourney Weaver is my favorite actress.
Yeah.
Didn't give a shit. Yeah. And what was her character? She was a scientist and... Oh, and she smokes?
And she smokes.
That's interesting?
Yeah.
It's like...
One thing, too, is it's like, you know, Cameron... I mean, I know you say The Abyss is one of his weaker movies, but I mean, even that... And I mean, it's not perfect, but even that has great character stuff. Like, you know, where he goes and... chucks the ring down in the toilet.
And then pulls it out.
But then he pulls it out, and then it ends up saving them later. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just, like...
Michael Biehn was, like, cutting lines in his arm.
Yeah. I mean, there's just, like, cool shit. And, I mean, probably one of the, you know, biggest dings you can put against Avatar is, like, Ben and I talked about it afterwards, and both of us were thinking about other movies and other things while we were watching Avatar, which is never a good sign.
No.
You know, like, I was sitting there, and I'm like, oh, God, you know, WALL-E did a much better job of, you know, setting up this whole thing about, you know, ecological disaster and, you know, humanity wasting resources and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And it was an animated movie. It had two goddamn robots, and those two robots were so much better developed than any character in Avatar.
WALL-E had a lot more symbolism in it, too. I mean, if you think about it, like the humans were actually on an ark.
Yeah.
And WALL-E was Jesus.
Yeah.
Because there's one part at the end when he's getting crushed, he's literally bearing a cross for humanity. I mean, it's some of it's not so subtle, but at least it's there.
Yeah.
And
it has, like, the great moment. I mean, even, like, smaller characters like the captain of the ship.
Yeah.
And speaking of movies with Sigourney Weaver in it, she's the, you know, the ship's...
That's true.
...computer thing or whatever when he's, like, learning about human history and...
Well, see, even though, like, all the fat asses on that ship, they're responsible for what happened to Earth, they're not treated as bad characters. They're almost, like, treated like victims.
Yeah.
Whereas in Avatar, it's paper thin. It's like, pretty much everyone in that movie is just a blank, except for you've got the evil army guy.
Yep.
And he's just, like, you know...
Yeah, just all gung-ho, wants to blow shit away. That's all he cares about.
And then what's-his-face, whose name I can never pronounce.
Giovanni Ribisi.
He's basically Burke from Aliens, but Burke from Aliens at least tried to trick Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
This guy's just, right off the bat, he's like, all we care about is this mineral.
Yep.
He's just... For a three-dimensional movie, he's a one-dimensional character, and it's terrible. It's like, you know, I don't think... Probably the president of Halliburton, or anybody can think of... I highly doubt they're even that bad. Or, like, probably even the president of Blackwater /Z. I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
I mean, people complain about, you know, that kind of thing in other Cameron movies. And maybe it's just because I'm getting older, but this one's pretty bad. Because,
everybody's
like, who cares?
Yeah, everybody's just painted in very broad strokes in it. It's just... I don't know. It's like... I mean, Titanic Billy Zane's character was, you know, similar to this sort of one-dimensionalism, but it's like he was the only character like that in that movie, where this one, every character is like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, he goes to all this trouble, you know, with this 3D and all this, you know, great technology, and yes, it looks great, but you don't care about anybody in the movie.
Well, I didn't care. I mean, maybe people do, but
I sure as hell didn't. It's like at the end, you know, when the big battle's going on and stuff, and it's like, I know I'm supposed to care, but I don't.
You mean the big battle where, in one scene where it's like, let's kill all the natives or blow up their tree or whatever.
I'm going to drink coffee while we do this.
Yeah, to show how badass I am. And the natives are shooting arrows at the gunships and they're just bouncing off the windows.
Yeah.
Because it has to look desperate. A few scenes later, when they're shooting arrows at the gunships, they penetrate the windows because then they're heroic.
Yes.
Like, WTF.
Yeah, stuff like that. It was just so... I mean, moments like that when I was watching the movie, and I was glad when we were discussing it a few days ago and you brought that up, because I thought maybe I imagined that. But it's just like, James Cameron, he's not like my favorite director in the world, but what he is, he's very detail-oriented in his filmmaking. You know, the classic example is in Terminator 2 when the T-1000's flying the helicopter. There's actually a third arm that you can see that's like... holding the yoke or whatever on the chopper, like flying it around, because his other two arms are doing things. And it's like, well, it's a liquid Terminator. He could have a third arm if he wanted to. But, you know, that's the sort of detail that Cameron puts in there where, you know, people have probably seen that movie 10 times and never noticed that, but it's there if you look for it.
Right.
But in this, there's shit like with the arrows where it's just like, seriously,
convenient
Cameron?
Convenient physics.
You know, it's like the crystal skull.
Yeah, the conveniently magnetic crystal skull.
Yeah, and I mean...
Not as bad as that, but...
Yeah, but kind of similar in how they're being received, though, because Indy 4 got pretty positive reviews, and it really wasn't a very good movie, and...
Well, Indy 4 was certainly worse than Avatar.
And I mean, Avatar's a better movie, but it's getting way better reviews than it deserves. It's like, you know, you go... It's just frustrating. Like, I'll go on Rotten Tomatoes and look at these blurbs from, like, the positive reviews, and a hell of a lot of them say, it looks so good, you won't care about the weak story. And it's like, the story's what matters. Any day of the week, I'll take a movie with a great story and maybe substandard effects over a movie with amazing effects.
You mean,
and
like, the first Terminator?
Story. Yeah, exactly.
The effects aren't very good in that movie. I mean, you know, they didn't have much money, but the story is great.
Yeah, and, you know, but it just blows my mind when I see critics saying that sort of stuff.
The thing is, you know, I've been waiting, ever since I heard he was making another movie, I've been waiting for it. But I still wasn't disappointed because it was pretty much exactly what I expected it to be. It wasn't any better, any worse than I expected, so I was strangely unaffected by it, but I am astounded at how many people seem to think it's the best movie ever made, which...
Ugh.
I mean, have they never seen any other movies? I mean, granted, Hollywood does basically remake the same story over and over and over, but still. Well, even like Dancer Wolves. Dancer Wolves was kind of... Really, it was kind of original at that time because, you know, that's like, you know, it was like 19 years ago, and like the touchy-feely, like, America is the bad guys. We really hadn't seen a lot of movies like that. I mean, there have been some Vietnam movies, but this was something set in the past.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even necessary that America was the bad guys. It was just, well, whatever.
Yeah, the white man or whatever. And
but it was kind of original for its time. And this is basically, you know, 20 years later, it is literally a remake of Dancing Wolves. I mean, there's even a Wind in His Hair character.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, it's...
Yeah,
of course, it's not as good.
No.
I mean, there's a lot of things it does right. Like, there's the reason for why the Na'vi creatures can speak English makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cameron does know how to photograph action, like, far better than someone like Michael Bay. Like, when the action sequences you don't care about are occurring, you know where everything is, you know what's happening, he pulls the camera back. I mean, that's all good. I mean, he's still good at that stuff. But, if I don't care about the story, then I don't care.
See, one of the things, too, is, like, the stuff, like, where, you know, how it explains how they know English and stuff. To me, that's the sort of shit that I would have rather seen in the movie. Like, that stuff would have been interesting, how the humans first came into contact with the Na'vi and, you know, got in good enough graces with them to set up schools and, you know, and ingratiate themselves with them. And that stuff would have been far more interesting than the movie we got, I think. Because it would have been different to some extent, you know. I think, you know, like we've been talking about, too, is that, like, amongst ourselves, you know, off the podcast, obviously, but one of the things, and it's not to say that we're better or anything because we've seen more movies, but it's like we're older, you know, and we have seen a lot of movies, and maybe if we had gone into Avatar and we were 15 years old and we hadn't seen Dances with Wolves and we hadn't seen Aliens and we hadn't seen Atlantis, maybe we would have liked the movie more. Because, I mean, the characters were still paper thin, but the story wouldn't have been like, oh, I've seen this before, like, at every turn. And, you know, because that was the problem. I was, like, bored during the movie, because it's like, oh, this is going to happen. Okay, yeah, this is going to happen. You know, it's like you knew exactly where it was going to go the whole time.
What they spent on Dancing with Wolves, like, $15 million. It was actually pretty cheap.
Yeah, and people thought it was going to be, like, a disaster or something, and then it came out and kicked ass.
The music in Avatar sucks, because I don't remember it, which means it sucks. It was just the typical, like, yada, yada, yada. It's like, fuck you, James Horner. You used to be good.
Yeah, what happened?
Danny Elfman'd out. Oh, so when you're watching Dancing with Wolves, chapters one through whatever, and the end of Atlantis, turn off your sound, because John Barry and James Newton Howard both kicked the shit out of James Horner in Avatar.
Why would you turn the sound off?
Because then you can't hear the music.
But you're watching Dances with Wolves and Atlantis.
Right, but those are movies with good musical scores, unlike Avatar.
Yes.
So watching them with a good musical score will not give you the proper Avatar experience.
I see what you're saying. Yes, yes.
Right.
So, yeah. Yep.
Well, like, the John Dunbar character, I mean, he doesn't really go through much character development, but other characters do in the movie.
Hmm.
As long as someone does, like, Wind in His Hair goes through development, Graham Greene's character develops. But,
well, it's got that great beginning. I mean, it's got, like, one of the great beginnings in all films where it just starts out in that tent and his leg's, like, bleeding and they might have to hack it off and, you know, they're, like, trying to save his leg and shit. And this is, like, the hero character in the movie.
That's true. And Avatar starts like cripple, too.
Yeah. Yeah. But whoop-de-doo, he's, like, coming out of some, like, cryostasis tube or some shit.
I did like how his legs looked.
Yeah, they did really good with that. I was like, wow, that's...
You know, they were atrophied and emaciated and...
Yeah.
They had to, like, pick them up and move them, but still, who cares? Well, another thing about that movie was it was criminally unhumorous.
Yeah.
I mean, when Titanic came out, I think it was a lot funnier than people expected it to be.
Yeah, it's got some laughs in it.
Like, most of the humor in Avatar was derived by this marine character in an Avatar body, like, saying, oh, shit, oh, crap, oh, shit.
Yeah.
It's like the part where they were making out, because I was thinking it in my brain. I think here's the key to humor in movies. If the movie says what people are probably thinking in your brain, and then you say it on screen, mm-hmm. It's funny. The part where he was like, I will mate with you, and they're like making out, I guess. And then I'm thinking, how do they do this?
Yeah.
And like, why didn't he say that? That would have been fucking hilarious. Yeah. Okay, someone can say, oh, well, yeah, you know, you can say that. It's like, well, it's true. Like, look at Titanic. And she's like, did we do it? And it was a huge laugh in the theater because it's exactly what you want to hear her say.
Yeah.
Ooh, Avatar.
Well, it's like at the end of Rambo 3 when the Russians are coming and he's just... Krenna's like, you know, what are we going to do or something? And Rambo just goes, fuck. And it was... I remember when I watched that the first time, in my head, fuck 'em was going off, and he said it, you know, and it was just like, yeah! You know, it was so great.
Well, then everything else in Avatar, it's like, it reminded me a lot of War of the Worlds, where it kind of, it was a perfectly decent movie, but everything that happened in it was something that had already happened in the Spielberg movie.
Yeah, like the Velociraptor type sequence
right,
in
I mean,
basement.
Oh, they're running from a Velociraptor in a kitchen. Oh, they're running from aliens in a basement. It's the same scene. And
yeah.
Like at the end, I mean, the fight scene between the Na'vi and the power suit guy at the end, it was good, but it was the end of Aliens, you know?
Yeah.
Right down to like the knife thing comes through the window. It's like, oh, I've seen it.
Yeah.
And ugh.
Well, that part just bothered me too. Like, you know, we talked about, and it's in the scene, the dude's in the big suit fighting against...
Which responds to his arm movements.
Yeah, and he's fighting, you know, the hero Sam Worthington in, you know, his blue-skin cat people outfit. And there's this little research lab, which is where he sits in his little, you know, pod thing or whatever to link into his avatar, which they never really explain how they actually link to the avatars, but that's fine.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah. But during that sequence, you know, there's a part in it where he's fighting Worthington, he throws him away, and then he goes over and starts smashing the lab. Like, he smashes in the window, and he smashes, like, one of the chair things, but it's not the one Worthington's in. And it's like, well, you know, this makes sense. It's like, yeah, he should try to destroy it, because if he kills Worthington that way, he'll
eliminate
the avatar.
Because the air in Pandora is toxic, and you die within, like, a couple of minutes if you breathe it.
Yes.
So he's trying to basically asphyxiate
the
real Sam Worthington.
And, but he didn't hit him, and so then he's, like, you know, doing whatever. But then Worthington, you know, the Navi Worthington comes back, and he's, like, fighting him, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And then he chucks him away again. But instead of going back over to the research lab where there's, like, one chair left for him to, like, take out, he instead just decides to, like, fuck around with Worthington's avatar, where all he would have to do is turn around and go back there and, like, smash up the thing. Worthington would be dead and all that. And I don't know, it just...
Well, then
that bothered me.
He picks up the Worthington avatar, and then he, like, pulls out that knife or whatever, and then he's usually like, I'm going to cut you. He basically talks. And then, I mean, of course the hero chick shows up and shoots him with an arrow.
Yeah, what a shock.
There's no surprises in this movie. If you've ever seen a movie before, there are no surprises in this movie.
Yeah.
The thing that really pissed me off is, you know, he gets shot in the suit, and, like, the case is open. And he gets shot in the suit, and he dies. And the suit falls over after he dies.
Yeah.
That was so stupid.
It's like, why?
Because it needs to look like he died, but that's...
It's so dumb.
Ugh.
Yeah. And then it ends exactly as you would think it would. Like, I remember that whole scene, I'm like, can it just end now? Because I know it's going to end with him opening his eyes, and then, boom, Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, look, that's what happened.
Shit, Terminator 3 pissed all over Avatar.
Damn straight.
Because you remember when Arnold shut himself down in that movie? What happened?
Yeah.
He became absolutely prostrate and still, he could not move.
Immobilized, yep. Yeah, Terminator 3 wipes its ass with Avatar.
We're probably the only people on Earth that would say that, but I don't know. It's just, so I guess it's not a bad movie, but it's one of the things, like, the more people say it's good, the worse it gets for me.
Yeah. It's just, like, painful because it's like, I don't know, just a little part of me dies when I hear people say that because it's like, you know, it's, if this movie's successful, you know, which, you know, maybe it's probably going to be, you know, at least relatively successful, and it's going to basically tell Hollywood, you know, it's okay to just make shiny shit and throw it up there. I mean, you know, it's like, yes, I enjoy Transformers 2, but I can admit it's a big, shiny fucking mess.
Well, at least Transformers 2 didn't
and
say
it
was the future of cinema.
Yeah.
I mean, it was basically a piece of garbage, and it knew it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's good, but I'm just saying it...
Yeah, it knows what it is. It doesn't pretend to be anything it isn't, and it's like I say, too, I think, for me, a little bit, Avatar's a victim of its own hype. You know, it's like, if it would have just come out in the summer, like it was originally supposed to... And if it wouldn't have come out proclaiming itself to be, like, the, you know, second coming of Christ or something in cinematic form, you know, and it just said, hey, I'm this big, you know, glossy summer action movie, I may not have, you know, had as sour of a opinion of it, I guess. I still would have had a lot of the same quibbles, but maybe I wouldn't be as hard on it. But when something comes out, you know, saying it's going to change movies and blah, 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 and all this great stuff, it's like it'd damn well better deliver.
Because when people see it and if they like it, they're like, wow, it is going to change movies because I liked it and it told me it would.
Yeah.
Which is stupid. I mean, like, if you look back, I mean, Matrix changed movies.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park changed movies. Batman changed movies, like at least marketing of movies.
Yeah. Star Wars.
Star Wars. Jaws. Sound of Music.
Yeah. Citizen Kane going way back.
Mm-hmm.
But,
because you can definitely see marked...
Like, shifts in, yeah.
But after the fact.
Yeah.
Nobody thought Matrix was going to do anything. It was just a little movie that came out in March.
Yeah.
And nobody knew what it was about. Maybe that's why it was so cool, but...
Yeah.
You know? Ugh.
Yeah, it's... I was... After seeing it, you know, I was like, you know, I... Try not to wish ill of movies, but I actually was hoping that this movie would fail, because it's like then it will, you know, it would kind of force Cameron to go back to formula to some extent, but
well, it's probably not an
I don't think it's going to be a failure. It might not be like a huge success either.
Well, it might be.
It it's not going to be a failure, and that's kind of sad because, you know, people are already saying, oh, it's a front runner for the Oscar, and it's like
that I don't get. It's not a good movie.
It's like, yes, it should be the front runner for all of the technical awards at the Oscars, but as far as Best Picture, no. Best Director, no.
It's like, well, I mean, it's probably because it has, like, this, you know, anti-military environmentalistic theme. And just because you like the environment and don't like the military, that doesn't mean just because a movie deals with those themes you should vote for it, because yeah. It's not really that good. I mean, again, if you want to see a good movie about the environment, go see WALL-E.
Yeah.
And, like, an anti-military movie, well, I can't really think of one, but it's just...
I'm sure they're out there, though.
Well, you know, another thing about that movie is, like, why did all the besides, like, the main bad guy, what do those soldiers really deserve to die? I mean, they're just doing their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
It's... Another thing, like, remember when they were going to drop all those bombs on that mother tree or whatever the fuck it was at the end of the spear tree?
Home tree.
Well, no, they already destroyed home tree. It was, like, home the tree. Brain tree. Or...
Yeah.
Anyway, so what they do is they blow up the ship, so the ship kind of goes off course a little bit and then also blows up. It's like, oh, that's so much better. It still causes this enormous explosion.
Oh, like, we didn't even talk about the MacGuffin in the movie, though.
Oh, unobtainium?
Yes.
What does it do?
We don't know. Apparently it's worth a shitload of money, though.
Humans are going back to their dying Earth that we didn't see.
Yes. And it's like, yes, essentially unobtainium is a MacGuffin, which is, you know, big thing from Hitchcock, where it's just like, it's something to move the story along, but it really doesn't matter. But still, it would have given some weight to the human's plight.
But you can't make the human sympathetic because they're evil.
But it's like, it would have been interesting to know, oh, it does that. Like, maybe they need it for terraforming or something. You know, it's like, oh, I can see why this is important.
Well, it's possible that unobtainium was almost like a metaphor. I mean, you know, think about, like, they're trying to, like, reform this planet like we're trying to reform Iraq and Afghanistan. It's really unobtainable as a goal.
Yeah.
Still, yeah.
It's a little...
I wanted to see what it did. Hammy. It floats. I don't care. What else does it do?
And we never see Earth.
Well, we were talking about this before the podcast started.
A sympathetic thing again, but...
I swear to God, in a stack of Bibles, there's a promo shot for this movie where... the hero character is at a bar in a wheelchair. And I was like, yeah, he's going to get in a bar fight in a wheelchair just like in Star Trek, and then he'll go into space. Shit, maybe that's what happened, and then after Star Trek came out, Cameron's like, oh shit, I can't have that scene now.
Yeah, it could be.
Because by the time, I mean, Cameron was still working on this movie when Star Trek came out. Yeah. But no, there's a promo shot where'd that scene go? Maybe. Yeah. The beginning is kind of like...
it's pretty rushed and not very coherent.
Yeah, so I think this... quite possible a lot was cut from the beginning of the movie.
Because I know we had some sound issues at the screening we saw, but I know when I saw that scene, I thought that... I didn't think it was a flashback, but from what I've read online, apparently there was a flashback in there. Because I was like, oh, this is very convenient that they brought this crippled Marine along on this, you know, interstellar flight or whatever and all that, but... you know, if it was a flashback, then I guess, yes, okay, I can see why he was on it, because they needed him to run his dead brother's avatar or whatever.
Well,
but...
something that bothered me with it, most Cameron movies, you really see how things work.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, you see the Titanic, it's in the dock, you see the tugboats pulling it out, you see it getting up to speed, you see all this. Yeah. Aliens, you see them on the Sulaku, then they... go inside the jump ship, then the doors open up, and the jump ship drops down, or the drop ship, then you see it going to the planet, you see everything.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it's like again, in the beginning, it's all, like, abbreviated, like,
yeah.
Oh, we want you to go to this planet, then you see a ship floating through space, then, like, a little ship comes off of it, and next thing you know, they're in Pandora. It's like, I mean, you know, Cameron was on all these, you know, boards and whatnot. It's like, oh yeah, here's how you would land on Mars, NASA, or here's how you'd build a Mars base and stuff. It's like, so obviously, you know, he's thought about, you know, vehicle reentry and, you know, second stages and stuff, but we don't get to see any of that in this movie. And why not make the trip to Pandora a journey?
Yeah.
That was what's so great about Titanic. It felt like you were on the ship.
Yeah.
But this is just like, oh, yeah, how we got to the planet's not important. It's like, I don't know. I'm more interested in that than like seeing a bunch of natives like wave their arms around while vines creep over Sigourney Weaver or whatever the hell was happening in that scene.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, like I say, it's like, yeah, that stuff would have been interesting. The stuff where humans first made contact would have been much more interesting, you know, to see how all of that came to pass. And instead, we're just dumped into this world where humans have already been here. They've already made some mistakes with the natives and, you know, lost trust and whatever. And, you know, they're after this resource and blah, blah, blah. And yes, of course, the movie's, you know, an allegory for, you know, American foreign policy and, you know, whatever the hell you want it to be, you can, you know, interpret whatever you want from it, and that's fine, I guess. But, yeah, it's just, to me, it was all about the characters. Because, I mean, yeah, the story isn't terrible. You know, it's like, obviously it was fantastic in Dances with Wolves, but, you know, it's like when you don't change really anything about it, it, you know, there's nothing to surprise you, nothing to keep you interested, and, you know, like stuff where they first meet the Na'vi and he gets, you know, in and he meets, like, you know, the chief and stuff like that. And then later on, of course, the chief dies. And, you know, I was like, am I supposed to care about this guy? Because he's not developed at all.
Yeah.
You just meet him, oh, he's the chief, and you see him in a couple of scenes, then he dies later. And it's like, sorry, the scene does nothing for me.
Well, they, you know, the, what is it, like, the chief dies in Dance with Wolves, too, but again, it's pretty brief. It's like, it's not like they draw it out and try to make you care, because it is kind of insignificant. I was going to say, even in Avatar, it is another scene that's just like Dancing with Wolves. In Dancing with Wolves, the soldiers pick him up again. They kind of capture him and like take him away from the Indians. The same thing happens in Avatar. They're like, oh shit, you're turning against us. So they basically, you know, cancel the Avatar program and they like take him out of it and put him in jail. Then of course they get rescued and they go right back to fight the humans. I mean, it's the same fucking movie, just not as good.
Like, one of the few things I liked in it was that, you know, like, thinking about it, it's like, we got this Avatar guy running around, and he's stirring up shit. It's like, what would you do? You'd probably go and unplug him. And they actually do that a couple of times. And then when Michelle Rodriguez, you know, breaks them out of jail after they've been captured, like Ben explained before, they actually take her chopper thing off, and they go and find the lab, and they actually move it so the military won't be able to find it easily.
Right.
And
that
stuff
makes
like that, it's like, okay, this makes sense. You know, it's like, all right, good. You know, this is...
Well, again, it's not like the story doesn't make sense. It's just...
Well, it's just usually not interesting.
Yeah.
It's the problem.
I mean, everything makes sense. Well, except for all the weird science bullshit or whatever.
Science hippie hybrid shit that goes on in it.
Yeah, I think like they use the word tree hugger like three or four times in that movie. I think they do it ironically.
Yeah.
Because obviously the movie is definitely a tree hugger movie, but get that thing there.
No, it's fine.
But I don't know. I really don't care about all this stuff. Like all this mythology, like Dancing with Wolves. I mean, how much time did they spend with like the spirituality of the Indians? Like
probably not nearly as much as they did in this.
I don't think there was anything. Did they talk about the Indians' god or their spirits in that movie at all? I don't think they did.
They might a little, but
I don't
it's
think
been
so.
A long time.
It was mostly about the language and like what they did and like their food and whatnot, but they didn't have all this like blah, 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 the Mother Earth and blah, 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 Pocahontas and blah, blah, blah. Eh.
But like the thing, in Dances with Wolves is like the buffalo are sacred animals, you know, to the Indians, and they only, you know, kill them for their needs, you know, like if they need food or if they need, you know, clothing, whatever. And of course there's these creatures that attack hero guy's avatar early on, and it's, I mean, it's the same sort of shit, because they attack him and then Uhura has to show up and...
They attack him for like 20 minutes, it seems like.
Yeah.
That scene was sitting for forever, like those little black dog things kept attacking him. It's like, okay, we get it. It's like, again, we have five scenes of these stupid CGI dogs attacking a stupid CGI creature, but we don't get to see him leaving Earth.
Yeah.
Yes, and Uhura shows up, of course.
Uhura saves him, of course. And then, you know, and then she's all upset with him because she had to kill these, you know, sacred creatures and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And it's just, I don't know.
I'm going to bet now. I bet there was a bar fight scene with a wheelchair. And he cut it out because of Star Trek, because that's pretty much how Star Trek started.
Yeah. Ugh.
Because if you think about it, like, the beginning of that movie was just bits and pieces and flashes. Like,
yeah.
Close-up of a guy, oh, we're coming to a new planet. Oh, I'm putting my brother in a oven or whatever was going on.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, a Sigourney Weaver's smoking, and okay, fine. Yeah, ugh. I don't know, I just, yeah, it's not what I, you know, and like you said, too, you know, when I said something, you know, Dale asked me about the movie or whatever, you know, and I said, I'm like, it was exactly what we expected it to be, you know, and it's, I think we all went in with pretty reasonable expectations. I mean, I know I had fairly low expectations, so if the movie was actually good, it should have exceeded my expectations and surprised me, and
right.
it didn't. And I gave it a fair shake. You know, it's like I didn't go in wanting to hate it. It's like I fucking went to a midnight showing and dropped $15. I don't go in wanting to hate a movie.
Like Titanic, I mean, I wanted to see it, but then it was actually a lot better than I even thought it would be. I mean, I was surprised at how good it was.
Oh, it was for me, too. And it's just an exceptional movie. And, I mean, in that case, Cameron had a great story to tell, and he used technology to tell it. Where in
well,
this
the story
case,
in that movie is pretty simple, but...
Simple, but it had... characters you cared about, and I mean, it even had great characters like the guy who designed the ship.
Oh, Dale's hero, Victor Garber.
Yeah, but I mean, he's just really great, and there's like that, you know, scene when the ship's going down and he's in that dining room all by himself.
Oh, and he adjusts the clock.
Yeah. I mean, just great, you know, little moments like that, and there's just nothing that's even remotely close to that in Avatar.
Well, the thing I still think was so good about Titanic is they spend a lot of time with the characters, and you could actually buy that they fall in love.
Yeah.
Because in so many movies, including Avatar, the only reason the characters fall in love is because they're in the same movie together.
Yeah, and they're male and female.
Right. But in Titanic, they kind of meet by accident, which is, you know, maybe that's a little iffy. Yeah. But it was still good.
Yeah, that's how it happens, though, in real life. You know,
well, how many women have you met while they're trying to kill themselves?
Well, I haven't met them while they're trying to kill themselves, but... I definitely met wife number one by accident, so
yeah,
it was a very random chain of events that brought us together, and so it's, I think that's more believable than a lot of things in movies, so it's, I could kind of see that in Titanic.
Or, well, and the meeting like that actually had something to do with, okay, if Jennifer Lopez is walking across the street with like an orange juice and she runs into Matthew McConaughey, that's just goofy, meet cute. But in Titanic, okay, maybe it was convenient to meet someone while she's trying to kill herself, but it actually had something to do with her character.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually plot-driven. But the thing I love about Titanic, going on from that, is the characters just seem to have fun together, and they had really good chemistry.
Yeah.
Like, the scene after they fuck, and they go up on deck, and it's, like, cold, and they're, like, ha-ha, laughing and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's, like, right before she says she's getting off the ship with him, I mean... they just look like they're having fun together, and you don't really see that so very often at all in movies, at least movies involving like relationships, because you know they just—it's not—it's not even necessarily like physical. They're just enjoying each other's company, and it's really fun. They're like running around the ship, and people are trying to catch them, and you see the whole ship. It's like, here's the boiler room. Here's how you get to the boiler room.
Well, I think the thing,
and you
too,
see the engines.
Yeah, that stuff's cool, and you know all those guys are screwed. It's like
God, you remember that when the door was coming down and the last guy gets there, you think he's going to get caught?
Yeah.
And he just barely God, that movie was so good. And the score was great, too.
Yeah. I think the thing, too, with like their romance, I mean, they both, you know, really good actors and they have chemistry. And the thing, too, is like with Titanic being a much longer movie, it had the benefit of kind of letting that relationship evolve. Where,
it wasn't much longer than Avatar.
Well, I'm not comparing it to Avatar.
Good.
You know, but like your typical romantic comedy or even, you know, drama where two people meet and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, those are usually like, you know, an hour and 45 minutes to maybe 2 hours. So they don't have that extra time to kind of allow it to breathe, I would say, which is fine. But I think that's just something that played in Titanic's favor. I mean, it was a movie that... deserved to run for 3 hours and 15 minutes, you know, and it filled its time very well, and one of the benefits of that was their relationship.
And you can, and he does things well, and that attracts her to him. That's another thing you don't see a lot in movies, like, you know, he can, like, draw well, and he's funny, and you can see why she's attracted to him for that reason. That's something, you just don't see that in movies, like, you know, people doing things well is a big part of attraction, and you don't see that in movies, but in Titanic they did, and yeah, it was good. Well, we should probably wrap this up. We're getting into Fistful of Review podcast length.
So you keep saying that, but I don't know. I think it's just becoming Ben Heck podcast length.
No!
If you haven't a lot to say, then why not say it? So
I guess the thing is we're just astounded that people's memories of movie plots has dropped to the point where they think Avatar is original. Because it certainly isn't.
I mean, maybe that's the thing. Maybe we just watch more movies than a lot of people. I don't know. I mean, I know there's plenty of people that have seen
I've watched a lot less movies than you or Dale, and I still think it was uncreative.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know. It's just weird. Just when I hear people make comments like that one guy did, it just makes my skin crawl because it's like...
Professional reviewers say that.
Yeah, and that really bothers me, and... Like, somebody at work made a comment like, oh, and G.I. Joe had, you know, great characters and stuff. And I'm like, you know, at least they showed where they were coming from. I mean, it's not like it was the greatest movie ever made, but it's like it showed, you know, the backstory of, like, Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow, and you could kind of see where their rivalry came from, and it showed where Cobra Commander came from.
G.I. Joe was a piece of shit, but it was a short piece of shit. I mean...
And it was fun.
I come back to this so often. Movies are just too goddamn long.
But, I mean, the thing is... Whether it's a piece of shit or whatever, it was fun, and it had more character development than fucking Avatar did, for my money. It's like, sure, it wasn't amazing or anything, but it's like, at least you got some backstory out of some of these characters, and you could actually see where they were coming from.
Actually, the main guy in G.I. Joe was like the guy from Step Up, right? He pretty much was the same as the main character in Avatar. He's like just some marine
guy.
Yeah,
he's just some random dude, and... Yeah, it was more like the peripheral characters and that got a bit more, you know, backstory to them. And
detonate the ice pack.
And even though I've had my reservations about Avatar pretty much from the first time I saw a trailer or even a screenshot from it, I never would have thought that I would say, you know, that G.I. Joe was the better movie.
I still think Up was the best movie of the year.
I don't know, I think I would go with Inglourious Basterds, even though it's not perfect, but it's either that or Watchmen.
Well, I'd rather see Inglourious Basterds nominated for an Oscar than frickin' Avatar. Oh, Watchmen I liked a lot.
Yeah, it'd be either one of those movies, probably, for me, without thinking about it, in case I'm missing something. But
actually, I've probably watched Watchmen like 4 times, so that's a lot for me.
Oh, that's a lot for you.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right, well, I guess we'll see you in the next decade on the BenHeck.com podcast. So, if you must see Avatar, know that it is Dancing with Wolves in Space. But if you like it, good for you.
Yes.
Just Dancing with Wolves in Space.
But if you want, you can just save yourself some time and watch Dances with Wolves and Atlantis, and you'll see two much better movies, and you'll save some money in the process.
We're all about helping you save money.
Yes.
Buy my book. All right, we'll see you next time.
Hasta luego.